Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The song is called America, Sue. Yeah. America, yeah. Ventura Highway.
Love this tune.
We're looking for something environmentally related. We're looking for an environmental song because, you know, the head of the APA, Scott Pruitt, out, done, finished, gone.
Yeah.
You can get in your soundproof million-dollar phone booth and transfer it into your Superman and outfit
Listen,
and fly away.
He's out. You have to admire anybody who has a bulletproof desk, though. I'm like if somebody gets into your office, I don't think your desk is going to protect you.
By the way, we are Paul Douglas, Jordana Green, Sue Blanche. Thank you for joining us today as we try to craft you a show. We talk about the big issues of the day and then breaking news 4 seconds before the show. But we love it. That's what we do.
Generally, have you noticed that on the big holiday weeks, there isn't quite as much breaking news?
Well, I bet Scott Pruitt's wishing that too.
Well, maybe they thought they could just sneak that in.
Breaking news for him. You're out.
5th of July. Couple of things we're tracking. Mike Pompeo is leaving for North Korea. Apparently nothing has moved forward since President Trump's summit in June.
I mean, that was like 5 minutes ago, though. You know, what were they supposed to do? Burn down everything?
Right.
I mean,
But reports suggest that Kim Jong-un has not halted his program.
Well, that's bad.
At all.
That's bad.
Full speed ahead. So we'll see if it can get that back on track and get some real concessions from North Korea. The first tariffs, Jor, are scheduled to hit $34 billion worth of Chinese imports tomorrow.
Okay, so should I, you know, get bread and milk and run to the store?
You should hit Walmart
and
tonight.
Buy
on your
stuff.
Way home. Yeah.
I'm a little nervous about
Stockpile.
This because I have been watching the news this morning and everyone's making a giant deal out of this. I feel like I should be running in the streets with my hands over my head.
We'll see. I mean, we'll see. It's going to be a standoff. You know, maybe the Chinese think we're bluffing. We think the Chinese are bluffing. But the Chinese said, quote, the U.S. is opening fire on the world.
Oh, boy.
With its tariffs. And Beijing warned it will respond the instant the Trump administration's taxes on $34 billion of Chinese imports go into effect, which happens midnight tonight. Mm-hmm. And our president has said he will drastically escalate the trade conflict if China retaliates. Ay, ay, ay.
Because if I can't get my Happy Meal toys, I'm going to be
stock
really
up on
upset.
Everything. Just camp out at Costco.
Of course, we're going to be talking about that throughout the show. It's a tough week to get high-profile guests, but we are certainly working on somebody, at least for tomorrow, to come on the show and talk about that.
But again, Scott Pruitt, EPA administrator, has just resigned. He was behind the largest regulatory rollback in the EPA's history, undoing, delaying, blocking many Obama-era environmental rules, among them a suite of historic regulations aimed at mitigating climate change pollution from the United States vehicles and power plants. And I don't know.
But then there was the other side. So I guess he had restraint with some of those regulations. But he certainly didn't seem to use restraint when it came to spend, spend, spend. Mr. Pruitt used both a private plane and a military jet to travel 4 times instead of flying commercial. That cost you and me, and you too, Paul, and you too, Susan, $60,000. He had $14,000 expenditures on travel around his home state of Oklahoma. Wow, $14,000 traveling around Oklahoma.
He had a soundproof booth in his office.
One of my favorites.
Do you have one of those?
I need one.
Do we need a soundproof booth?
Susan chews her gum really loud. I need a soundproof booth.
And apparently he rented a townhome in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. from a lobbyist for $50 a night, which brought
That's
up concerns about conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all of these distractions, ultimately, even though he implemented the president's policy, doing what the president wanted, I think all of these distractions and lawsuits eventually were his undoing.
He obtained through a Freedom of Information Act request something. He reached out to the CEO of Chick-fil-A about the possibility of his wife becoming a franchise owner.
Right, pulling a few strings.
I mean, really? Dude, take it down a notch.
And I read
I'm sure he gets paid well as the head of the EPA.
It's easier getting into Harvard than it is getting a Chick-fil-A franchise.
Really? Oh, yes. It's very competitive?
Very, very hard. The vetting process is unbelievable.
Because you can't be gay.
Well, no.
I don't think you can be gay.
Are you talking happy and carefree definition?
I am not. I am not
the old definition.
Happy and carefree. You know, Pyro called in with a question on the tariffs. Pyro, we'll put you on, but here's the deal. We're not that bright, and I don't know if we can answer your question about the tariffs, but it does not preclude you from asking it, sir.
All right. Loyal listener, Paul and Jernea.
Thank you.
I'm looking to see all this so-called tariffs, whether it goes from which side, China or us. When we collect that tariff, it probably is reducing our national debt, right? I'm hoping. Where does that money go?
Oh, I guess to just pay off the debt? Question mark, she said, not knowing the answer.
That'd be a good question that some listener, I'm sure, smarter than I can answer. But I'm curious, when we assess a tariff for something to come in, so that money, does that go
back to the Treasury, wouldn't it?
You would assume.
I wonder. I mean, if it is, maybe these tariffs are a good thing. We might become solvent.
Maybe. What is it, $17 trillion now? Is that what we're up to?
Oh, no, it's over 20.
Oh, Jesus.
All good, you two. You always do a good job.
We're actually failing you miserably, Pyro. We don't know the answer.
Well, somebody, one of these listeners will tell us where all this tariff money, where is it going?
You're right, sir.
Go to the country assessing it, and they get to use it for whatever they want? Or is it, you know, I guess that's our question. But the best part of the show is Susan Blanche.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Susan for president. She needs a raise.
I think so.
Pyro,
thanks,
you're the best.
Pyro.
Thanks for calling in, love.
Bye-bye.
But, I mean, we've been running.
So Blanche.
We've been running a trade deficit forever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter whether it's a Democrat or a mm-hmm. Republican administration. I mean, we have this long, rich history mm-hmm. of spending more than we take in.
Mm-hmm.
And
we're good at that.
And the Chinese have been good about financing our federal debt. I mean, they own many trillions worth of our $20-plus trillion. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's a slippery slope.
But could a trade war and these tariffs reduce that and solve this problem? Everybody's up in arms. Look, I don't mean to be defending the president because I have no idea if his policies are going to work. We're going to hopefully find out from a real expert who actually knows things, not like you and me. But could this happen? It sounds like a lot of pain in the meantime and a lot of us not getting our iPhones or our Happy Meal toys or all the crap they make in China. I bet Scott Pruitt orders a lot of stuff from China. Maybe one of the fountain pens. He ordered 12 fountain pens, by the way, with the EPA seal for $1,500. But they
wow, these China. Are nice fountain pens. But again, would you be willing to pay more across the board knowing that things are made perhaps in the United States or other countries where we have a more favorable trading environment? The president's whole approach is, look, I'm going to negotiate on a country-by-country basis. That's what he wants to do, use some of his business mm-hmm. acumen mm-hmm. and see if he can parlay that into deals that are more fair for the United States.
I get that. But that's it. There's going to be a little bit of pain in the meantime while we're renegotiating.
There may be
deals,
a lot of pain.
But is it going to be worth it? I don't have the answer.
And this is a grand experiment.
Right.
Right? It's a little like, you know, a lot of the things that the president is mm-hmm. doing.
I understand we've never done anything like this
unconventional,
before.
Right. Non-traditional.
Changing the game.
And maybe, you know, rearranging the chairs. Trying something new, trying something different, mm-hmm. trying a different approach may be the right approach. But when you're in the middle of it,
it's painful.
And you've got change and uncertainty, and nobody likes uncertainty and change, you're right. There's going to be a fair amount of pain. Will we look back a year from now and say that hurt? But hey, look, we're in a better spot. A lot of people are concerned. A lot of people continue to say that you cannot win a trade war. And
how do they know?
The last time we had this kind of a scenario with the, you know, huge tariffs, mm-hmm. global tariffs, was in the 1920s, and it.
Well, that went poorly for us.
It went badly, yes. Went of course, resulting in, you know, one of many factors mm-hmm. that led to the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. We'll see. I'm keeping an open mind. I hope the president knows what he's doing, getting good advice. We will see. We are in uncharted territory.
I would like, I know we're late for the break, but I would like the president to walk us through it. You know, he's going ahead with these tariffs.
But you never show your hand. If you're a businessman, you never show your hand. Right? Here's exactly why would we do that with the Chinese? They will take advantage of us every which way to Sunday. So if he has a game plan, and I have to believe, I have to hope that he does, there is a plan. Now he's trying to execute that plan. We will see. At the end of the day, you know, will we get results? Will it put more Americans back to work? Will it revive some of these industries? I mean, that's the big unknown.
Okay, that's the question then, because we've been hearing from our soybean farmers. We've been hearing from our pork farmers saying this is not going to go well for us. The question now is, it's happening. It's going into effect tomorrow. Do we shut up and chill and wait it out? Or do we keep fighting because we are so afraid of the outcome? I'm curious to know. Are you ready to chill and wait it out? Or no, we need to shut this down. It's the unknown, and we do not want the tariffs to go into effect. We'll have a few minutes after the break.
That's right. Give us a call. Let us know what you think.
651-989-9226. Or send us a text at 81807. Paul and Jordan, right back. Welcome back. Jordana and Paul here. And Susan Blanche, the best part of the show, according to mm-hmm. Pyro, and us. Because none of this would happen without Sue Blanche. So thank you, love.
Is that his real name, Pyro? Or is that a nickname? Is it a hobby? I'm not casting judgment. I'm just... I think I had some
Could
buddies
be evidence.
Who had nicknames Pyro. They loved their fireworks.
So we're talking about these tariffs that are going into effect tomorrow. And asking that hard question, we haven't seen this in our lifetime. Could it be so crazy as to work that, yes, there will be pain in the meantime? And look, I'm not a soybean farmer and I'm not a pork farmer. And I have a lot of empathy for anybody who's going to feel that pain. I really do. But is this the burning down the house we need to get to rebuild something that's a stronger America? I don't know. You answer that question. Jerry's in Savage. Jerry's got some thoughts on this trade imbalance. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, Jerry.
Hello. How are you today?
Great. Happy Thursday, sir.
Yeah, really. Just the tariffs are one issue, but the bigger underlying problem is the trade imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, if you trade like with China right now, we trade, and basically we buy many more goods than we sell to them.
Right.
So as an end game, say at the end of the year, we buy $10 trillion worth of more goods, then we have to basically send them $10 trillion because it's like a cash exchange when it's all said and done. Well, the problem with that is they now have $10 trillion U.S. dollars. Well, the only thing that's really traded on the global market in dollars is oil. So if they don't need to buy $10 trillion worth of oil to put that money back out into the world economy, all they can basically do is buy American assets because we're the ones who take dollars. So that's how people are saying that the Chinese basically own the U.S. government, because they have all these excess dollars, they are buying all of our treasury bonds.
I was just going to say, yeah, they're one of the biggest purchasers of treasuries, right? They are financing a big chunk of that $20-plus trillion deficit.
Exactly. So that's because that's all they can do when they have excess dollars. We ran into the same type of scenario back in the 70s and 80s with the Japanese economy, but instead of them buying U.S. treasuries, they bought lots and lots of U.S. assets. That's why the running joke back then was the Japanese were buying Hawaii. Because
right.
You know, you have to go somewhere where you can, you know, someone who will accept
spend the
dollars.
Money.
I remember the paranoia about the Japanese back in the 1980s.
Exactly. And it's the exact same scenario. It's just the Chinese are literally buying our treasury. So you have to step lightly because if you upset them enough where they say, oh, we're not going to buy your treasury bonds
right.
anymore.
Exactly.
Congratulations. Now they can manipulate our interest rate horribly. If they say, okay, we're just not going to buy them for, say, a month. Now the U.S. Treasury has to find someone
other buyers.
To buy them.
To buy mm-hmm. our extra $1 trillion worth of debt over the next 3 months. So they may have to raise interest rates drastically to entice somebody to actually want to buy them.
Jerry, could this be – Jerry, let me ask you a question. Do you think this brinkmanship attempt by this president to open up the Chinese market, which still has a lot of restrictions – I mean, you can't go in and buy Chinese companies, at least not easily. So that's part of the imbalance, right, and the unfairness. It's not a level playing field. And
absolutely, absolutely. And the issue is, you know, you can't even necessarily go and buy a bunch of their currency because that's where you get people talking and using the phrase currency manipulators mm-hmm. to give themselves a more favorable exchange rate. So they can try to get other countries' currencies because, again, you know, we could all of a sudden decide to buy $10 trillion worth of stuff from Venezuela, but then it only behooves them to do that if they now have $10 trillion worth of goods mm-hmm. that they want to actually purchase. Otherwise, they're just sitting on these dollars that aren't backed by mm-hmm. gold or anything anymore. It's simply our promise. So they're relatively useless until someone says they want the dollars in exchange for something. So
Jerry's our new economic advisor here on the
yeah.
Paul and Giordano Show. Wait, so Jerry, so walk us through it. Like what I asked before, could this be a good strategy to get us out from under us being so afraid that they're not going to continue to keep buying up our currency and buying up our bonds? Is this? Do you think it's a good strategy?
It's a great strategy if they don't balk. I mean, there's huge ramifications because, like I say, right now, if all of a sudden they put the tariffs on soybeans, well, what's that going to do? That's going to further extend the imbalance because they're not buying that anymore because now the Chinese, you know, if they've got to pay a 25% tariff, they're going to go to whatever other country buys.
So Jerry,
and now you're manipulating the other side of the formula and you're making it worse. It's a game of Russian roulette, and it could work out great if the gun's pointed the other way when it goes off. But you just that's the crapshoot.
We'll see who blinks first.
That's what this is going to boil down to. And you know, Trump prides himself being on the the consummate negotiator and gamesmanship, mm-hmm. but you know he might be great. He might be out of his league. I'm a huge Trump supporter, but this has got, this is something where if the wrong person blinks, it takes years to recover from.
He's juggling with hand grenades.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Jerry, you made some great points today. Thank you for calling in, and more important, thanks for listening.
Not a problem. Have a good day.
You too, sir.
We have to hire him.
He's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got to know stuff that Jerry
absolutely.
Knows. I know. Crazy. Look, can we sneak this call in?
So yeah, let's do it real quick.
Gene, we got about 30 seconds. Sorry we went long with Jerry.
Hey, Gene.
Yeah, 2 points. I agree pretty much to what your previous caller said. But if the U.S. economy experts say that the deficit is bad for the United States overall, they've got to fix it somehow. And the other thing, you talked about how much I'd be willing to pay if products were here, I'd say anywhere from 5 to 10% more.
Mm.
On the things that I would buy here.
That
wouldn't bother me if it created jobs.
I think you appeal to people's patriotism mm-hmm. and the longer,
sure.
you know, mm-hmm. we're so obsessed with short-term goals and all of us want to save money where we can save money. But if mm-hmm. this puts more Americans back to work mm-hmm. and does good things for our deficit, yeah, I think a majority of Americans might come around.
And Gene, that was good. You brought us back there to the end. That was a question you asked in the beginning. I think
yeah.
it's a really good question and definitely something we should all think about.
Would you pay a little bit more uh-huh. knowing that these products are made here and that they employ Americans?
Great call. Smart listeners. Gene, Jerry, all
thank
of you.
Thank you, Gene.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it. It's 3:32. We're going to break for news. Let's talk about affirmative action. Should it be only merit-based to get into college? Does race play a role? Affirmative action after the break. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Giordana Green, Paul Douglas. Hey, Denny Hecker's getting out of jail.
He is. Yes.
Out of jail. So you buying a car from Jenny Hecker?
I'd like to chat with him.
Yeah, me too.
He's been in the clinker for, what, 7 years?
Yes.
And I know it wasn't, you know, high security, maximum security prison, but still, you know, 7 years away from, he did his time, right?
He absolutely did his time. But I wonder what, and this is, we are going to try to
what the reaction will be in the community.
Yes. Susan's going to try to get him on the show, of course. But what's your life like now? What happens post-prison? What happens to your reputation? I mean, can you work? Does he need to work? Does he have any money? Do his friends come back? And is it poker night again? What's that? What is your life like after prison?
In prison, he didn't have to pay any bills, right? Do they don't forward the bills?
I don't think so.
To your cell?
I don't think so.
So think about it. If you don't have to pay your bills, mm-hmm. you have to still pay your taxes, I guess, on whatever property he has.
How that works? Yeah.
How does that work?
Or did he sell it all before he went to prison? Did it go to his debtors, his creditors?
Right.
I don't know.
So many questions.
Yeah.
Denny, if you're listening, call us.
Yeah, 651-989-9226. But more importantly, if you were a friend of Denny's,
right,
what is that like for you? So he's out. So he's like, hey, I'm home. Welcome back.
It's like a really long, bad vacation.
Can we come barbecue tonight? You know, is that dynamic?
But again, most Americans are forgiving. If people are repentant, right?
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah.
Most people are willing to give other people a second chance.
Paid his debt to society.
But, you know, what will the second act be like? Can you fully recover from something like this? I don't know.
Not buying a car from Denny Hecker. But maybe I'm being too rigid. Maybe I should.
Let's talk to him first. Let's withhold judgment.
All right.
And
come on the show, Denny.
Come on, Denny.
Come on the show. Let's talk about affirmative action. On Tuesday, the Trump administration rescinded Obama-era guidance to school districts and colleges and universities about how they could take race into account. They claim they don't want race to be a factor. What do you think about affirmative action? I know this debate came into being probably in like the 80s, maybe even earlier than that. I remember debating this in Model Congress. We did a model. I know I was kind of a nerd. Sorry. We did a Model Congress when I was in high school, and bills about affirmative action, because there was no legislation at that point, came. We would debate this all the time. And of course, it was usually the white kids that said, yes, 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 we should do this. The black kids in my school didn't really take that on as their thing. Maybe they thought it was, I don't know, too self-serving.
I think you can make a case that African-Americans specifically, with the discrimination that they've had to put up with over many centuries, I think you can make the case, I can make the case, that there needs to be some special provisions. They should be given special treatment.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, other races, I just can't make those same claims that there has been systematic discrimination generation after generation. So part of me is like, let the free market figure it out. It should be merit-based. It should be based on the work that you do or based on whatever criteria a specific university has. You know, some of it is your SAT scores, et cetera, but it should also be other things. You know, are you a well-rounded individual? What have you done?
Well, and then the question becomes, are you a well-rounded individual? What have you done? And then what do we want our colleges and universities to look like?
Right.
Just a bunch of bookworms?
We want them to be diverse, right?
Well, should race play a role? The debate has been raging on cable news. It can continue here. Our phone number, by the way, is 651-989-9226. You know, you mentioned merit-based, and that's what Jeff Sessions says about these new Trump guidelines. Okay? And on CNN, Michael Eric Dyson, he's an academic. He's also the author of What Truth Sounds Like, had this to say about merit-based admissions.
They usually quote Martin Luther King Jr., who said, "Judge me by the content of the character, not the color of my skin." But Martin Luther King Jr. in 1963, in his book, Why We Can't Wait, said that if the nation has done something special against the Negro, as we were then called, for 240 years, the nation must do now something special for the Negro. Mm-hmm. So merit is dependent upon who counts what is meritorious. Think about this. When people used to get access to schools, they were like, "You're a violin player from Vermont, and we have a deficit of people from there." There were always extra academic, extracurricular considerations to play in terms of doling out who got into these schools or not. So race is one among many others.
For sure.
If race has been used as a demerit, it has to be constituted as a merit. Great.
Does it? Hmm. So think about that. Is race like playing a violin? Because you come from a different race that's not white, do you bring a certain set of skills, knowledge, experience, color? Well, color, that's a bad word that I use there. But do you bring something extra to the table at college? You don't have to answer it, because Paris Denard, who's part of the Trump Advisory Board, was also on the program with Michael. He had this to say.
I think former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said it best when talking about this specific issue. She said, "Race is a factor, but race should not be the factor in determining one's admission into a college or university."
I mean, it sounds like the Trump administration is saying, I'll read it to you. The Trump administration said Tuesday it was abandoning Obama administration policies that called on universities to consider race as a factor in diversifying their campuses, signaling the administration will champion race-blind admissions.
I think that, make no mistake about the president's feeling on merit, and the president does feel that we should help people that need merit, that meet certain criteria and that are qualified and have all the scores to do things. But I don't think that this should by any means suggest that the administration is somehow against minorities.
Sorry, I cut him off there. Minorities is how he finished it. And I feel bad for Paris, because Paris is a black man. He worked for George W. Bush. Mm-hmm. He's now on the Trump Advisory Board. And, you know, the host did ask him. She said, you know, "Do you believe in affirmative action?" And you could almost see the conflict in his face.
Yes, but
he didn't feel like he could say, "No, I don't believe that race should be a factor." Yet he quoted Condoleezza Rice, but that's not really what the administration is saying. What the administration is saying, no more race. You don't get to have any race cards when you are considered for college.
But this lawsuit against Harvard
is
really quite extraordinary on the part of Asian Americans. They're basically accusing admissions officials at Harvard of giving Asian Americans the lowest, listen to this, personal rating score of any racial group. The rating, part of what's used to decide who is admitted at Harvard, considers things like whether an applicant has positive personality, character traits like helpfulness, courage, kindness.
How can you find
How
that?
How do you measure those?
How do you find that from their test scores? I mean, is this after an interview?
Is this an interview? I mean, yeah. how do you put that into your CV, your bio? Mm-hmm.
And that's the other, that's the flip side of this. You know,
it's a slippery slope.
Who are against, you know, affirmative action say, this is actually hurting, you know, affirmative action is hurting the Asian population because, you know, they score well. They do.
Right.
This is just the facts. You know, this is just the facts. They score well in tests. They're academically advanced.
Yes.
So they're saying now, Harvard is saying, oh no, if you're Asian, you can't come. You know, like there's too many Asian folks. So they're saying affirmative action is hurting them and they, you know, that they shouldn't be allowed in because of their race, because of their ethnicity. It's such a slippery slope. It really is a slippery slope. You get to chime in 651-989-9226, or you can send us a text at 81807. Eric Dyson, who I played you a little bit of sound for, he did have some pretty good points on why there should be diversity among college campuses. Here's more of what he had to say.
But what it does suggest is that there should be a consideration of raising a holistic understanding of how college administration, college admissions are administered. So in that case, race is a figure, a significant feature among many others when considering a person, so that diversity enhances not only African-American and Latino people who have been denied access, but those white students who need to have the benefit of those black students and brown students. For instance, think about the fact we would have far fewer people inclined to call the police on strange acting black or brown people if they actually had a college course with them and interacted with them.
That's kind of a good point.
Hmm.
Right? If you're around black and brown people or people of a different religion, Muslim, Jew, Sikh, whatever, they are less foreign to you. They're less scary. They're
right.
less unusual.
Right.
You have a comfortability factor.
Absolutely.
And that's
absolutely.
Just the truth.
Hey, Paul, our Native Americans certainly deserve special attention more than anyone else. Well, there has been mm-hmm. systematic discrimination against Native Americans for a long time. So,
of course,
I think you could and should make the argument that, yes, there should be special considerations.
So,
but, you know, every single person that comes in from every other country, you know, I'm a victim. I didn't get in, so I'm a victim. I don't know. This whole victim mythology.
I don't know. I do believe that there should be diversity
special
on college campuses.
Special considerations for certain people,
and
yes.
And then the question becomes, I know we have more questions than answers on today's show, but, you know, stuff to think about over the holiday. Then, if you are not accounting for race, let's say it's totally merit-based, do you account for socioeconomics? Do you account for people
somebody
in
growing
poverty?
Up in the ghetto is Correct. Not going to have access to the same resources?
Correct.
Right, right.
That's it. They don't do rowing. They don't do crew. They don't do ballet because maybe they don't have access to the money to pay for violin lessons and all this extra stuff. So then their extracurriculars are down. Maybe they don't look as well-rounded. They don't have those personality traits that are working against the Asians. So then do you look at that as a factor? If you are under a certain socioeconomic level but you have a good GPA, do we let you in? I don't know, because you need to have some diversity.
And again, it's going to vary from university to university. There is no one standard mm-hmm. admissions criteria. I mean, every college, as far as I know, is different.
Yeah,
yes, they look
thing.
At the SATs mm-hmm. and the ACTs. Mm-hmm. But it's up to every university to kind of figure out who do we want? Who do we want to represent, you know, our college?
Welcome back. Jordana and Paul here. Thank you for hanging out with us. I do feel like we have more questions than answers for you today on the show.
That's usually the case.
Try to find solutions, but I can't find a solution to the tariff yet. Might have to let that play out. Might have to let this affirmative action thing play out, although I do believe in diversity among college campuses.
Absolutely.
Just how do you do it in a fair and equitable way?
And everybody's going to have a different opinion
yes.
of what is fair and equitable,
yes.
right?
Yes. That's why I'm not going to run for office, because my way is no way better than your way. It's not.
If we had all the solutions.
Wouldn't that be nice?
We'd be over at the Capitol in St. Paul.
Show would be over. Like, okay, thanks for listening. We're good. We're out. Done.
We have it all figured out. Here is the answer key. We're going to publish the answer key.
I saw a picture of you riding in a pontoon boat, driving a pontoon boat with a giant Cat in the Hat, Dr. Seuss American flag hat.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
looked
I know.
Very cute.
Yeah. There was no alcohol at that hour. It was pretty early. It was 10 a.m.
Sure, there wasn't.
And usually there are 30 or 40 pontoons as part of this 4th of July flotilla. But this year the rain scared people away. There were only like seven of us.
That on Pelican Lake.
It's kind of pathetic.
Yeah, sorry.
But we were out there representing, and we did our best.
Well done.
It was fun.
You had a nice little break?
Yeah, well, any chance to head up to the lake. Yeah, any lake.
Mm-hmm.
No, any body of water.
That's
a small stream will work in uh-huh. a pinch. A wetland, a pond.
I'm with you. We went over to a friend's house in her pool, and it rained on us, but we still got in the pool. I think you're right. Anytime you're in the water, it's a good day.
Your blood pressure comes down like 20 points, and I think somebody's tried explaining this to me. Paul, it's because our bodies are mostly water. When we're near water, our blood pressure comes down. I go, well, why? Why would your blood pressure come down? Because you're next to a body of water.
Just listen to that guy. He might know something you don't.
I don't know.
I do know that when you have small kids and they're acting up, if you put them in water, they will calm down. Like the bath or a kiddie pool.
Really?
Or the sink, if they're small enough, they do. Yes, they just get distracted and they're happy. So, yes, you mothers or fathers of small children that are having a tantrum right now because they're out of school and
water,
y'all want to kill each other. Put them in water.
Lobbing water balloons.
Put them in water.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.